This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Funny old game football, isn't it? Fickle old game football, you might say. He's not doing too bad, is he, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? No, not doing too bad. Like I said at the top, beat Manchester City yesterday, of course. Unless you've been living under a rock, you wouldn't have seen that. Beat Tottenham. I think he did, didn't he? Yeah, beat Tottenham earlier in the week as well. Beat Leicester earlier on in the season. They're riding high in second. And took points off Liverpool this season as well. So not doing too bad, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. This is the Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. Right now we're focusing on the Red Devils and that emphatic victory against their Manchester rivals, their noisy neighbours yesterday at the Etihad. Goals from Marcus Rashford, his 13th of the season, by the way, equaling his best goal-scoring return for the club. And we're only in December. Anthony Martial with the other as well. A fine left-footed strike in off the post after a very good move involving him and Daniel James. We've got Mark Flanagan on the line, our Northwest correspondent as per. Mark, he's not too bad, is he, Ollie?
Top four it's on, isn't it, Matt?
Mate,
it's all guns blazing now.
I just can't believe it. The shift again in narrative, it's just incredible.
Well, it's that season, isn't it? I mean, we all thought Chelsea, Man City, and obviously Liverpool were nailed on a month ago, and Frank Lampard couldn't do anything wrong, and Ole couldn't do anything right, and now the gap is only 5 points.
It's just 5 points, mate.
Which is nothing.
All it takes is a week to change in football. I've been trying to tell people this, and I could well be proven wrong. Absolutely, I could well be proven wrong. Losing at home to Crystal Palace, yes, not great. Drawing away at Sheffield United, although Sheffield United aren't bad, to be fair. They won again today. The only team, apart from Liverpool, unbeaten away from home in the Premier League this season. Of course, losing to Newcastle. But again, they've shown, do you know what? They're not too bad under Steve Bruce this season. But those victories over Leicester. Yes, Leicester probably didn't set their stall out right under Brendan Rodgers. They'll be the first to admit that. He'd probably be the first to admit that. But to beat Jose Mourinho's Tottenham, by the way, in a game that we simply had to win, regardless of what happens for the rest of the season, even if we lose at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium later on in the season, beating Jose at Old Trafford had to be done. And of course, taking points off Liverpool. So, is it purely that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who was a big game player, is actually a big game manager?
Yeah, well, that's the $64,000 question, isn't it? And they've got a run of games against the lesser teams coming up. So it's no good beating Tottenham and beating Manchester City and then losing to Everton and not beating Watford. And that's the big test now for Manchester United. Can they build on this? I mean, you could see how much it meant to all the players, the manager, the atmosphere, the emotion in with the likes of Rashford and Lingard after that game. It was incredible, but they just have to push on now, and it's critically important. There is a definite window of opportunity. We thought top four was gone, but it's there, and it's so important that they keep it going. You know, you can look at it in two different ways. Is it that they can only get up for the big games and they can't get themselves up for the smaller games, or is it just that thing of the way that United play? They need that space in behind the midfield for their dynamics sprinters. I think the way that United set up, I think they can run through teams. They've got to now prove that they can pass through teams who are going to sit deeper, and that's where the critically important thing. We've been worried about the midfield all season, and McTominay and Fred are good and they work hard in one respect, in that they can mop up and take up good positions in terms of breaking up play, but can they help break down teams who are going to put eight men behind the ball and try and catch United on the break? And that sort of side of the game is the really important part that they've got to build on and bring into the game and show more evidence of going forward if they want to make top four this season.
So is this, Mark, not simply, like we've said before in previous shows, all about trusting the process? Rome wasn't built in a day. Yes, I understand that's not the easiest argument when you're talking about Manchester United. There are greater demands than that. But we heard Marcus Rashford speak after the game yesterday. By the way, he looked like a schoolboy in one of his interviews with his little bubble hat and his tie. He looked like he was on his lunch break. But he did say that, you know, he's spoken openly, and I do believe him as well. He said, you know, it's about trusting the process and it is about following what the manager wants to do. So as long as we stick to that, then I'm sure the results will come good. I'm sure that the Manchester United way of playing and that consistency that the team is lacking at the moment will start to turn around.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because, I mean, obviously, in terms of the quality of the squad, we're all a bit unsure about just how good Fred is. We're all a bit slightly unsure about Maguire in some respects. Wan-Bissaka, absolutely epic, brilliant defensive effort and kept Sterling quiet for a large majority of that game, but not great going forward. And I think we're just slightly worried about a number of the players, where they can cut it. Obviously, particularly people like Pereira and Lingard as well. There's too many question marks hanging over the squad. And we're not sure at the moment as well whether they are on an upward curve, because we've had a huge upward curve before under Oli, which culminated with that win in Paris, and then we had this huge dip. So I think it's just that thing of, we just need more evidence that they are definitely moving in the right direction. It is only two wins. Let's not get carried away, because last week, you know, having been outplayed for Villa in the first half, it was all a little bit doom and gloom. I think what United fans need to see is a consistent level of performance where they can play for 70, 80 minutes of a game, not just half an hour like they did against City, and then sort of hang on. They need that more consistent, be able to dominate teams a bit better, be able to dominate supposedly inferior teams. And that's where we'll see definite progression under Oli, I think.
Interesting quotes from Ryan Giggs after the game, Mark. And you just mentioned the midfield there. I think Scott McTominay is absolutely the new hero for Manchester United, without a shadow of a doubt. It just showed the void that was left when he was injured for that brief period. Fred, slowly, just starting to get there. I'm still a bit apprehensive sometimes when I see him on the ball. He did play brilliantly again yesterday, but I do think there are still reservations out. That's just about him getting the confidence that he needs to get. But Ryan Giggs, after the game, did say, of course, the next step is breaking teams down. We just discussed that, like you said there. He said, and that's why we have to get Paul Pogba back. He's the one who can unlock the door, get him back playing well and consistently, because that's the next step. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do, absolutely, in terms of breaking it down. I just worry about Pogba and in his motivation, and whether he is committed to it. And if you haven't got the attitude and the determination and everything else, if you are fully committed to it, whether you're going to be able to do it out on the pitch. I think he's obviously a lot better than Pereira. I think he's obviously a lot better than Mata. And I think in a three, even a kind of a half at it, Pogba is a better option than those two. I just would question, actually, the thing about McTominay. I think McTominay's done really, really well, and I was quite surprised by how people were sort of fawning over him after the Spurs game, because he gave the ball away a lot against Spurs. He gave the ball away with a bit of a kamikaze pass, which led to Tottenham's goal. And actually watched the game back again. I watched the whole game back again. And in about six or seven instances, he gave the ball away when he wasn't under a tremendous amount of pressure. There were decent options available to him. And I think that's an area of the game where he's really got to step up. And that really feeds into what we've been talking about, breaking teams down, is that thing of, if Manchester United have been able to, with nice, quick, one-touch passing, which you sometimes see from Martial and Rashford, and James as well, actually. I think he does quite a bit of it quite well, but less so from Fred and McTominay. And that's what you need. You need the five of them, the six of them working together, which is what City and Liverpool do so well, to break down teams who sit deep.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Absolutely agree with that. And actually, I think that what you're saying with regards to Paul Pogba and the hunger and the appetite to actually produce and go that next level with Manchester United might not be there. I'd say more than anybody, he is the one really willing, McTominay and Fred and Pereira, to actually put in the performances. So Ole Gunnar Solskjaer goes, do you know what, actually, maybe we can sell Paul Pogba. Maybe we don't need him. And then he gets his move.
Yeah, well, I think that's I think that's a fair comment, and I think he would completely agree. I think obviously he knows as well that if Pogba is sold and a replacement isn't brought in, it would be an awful thing for United, for the club, to have no replacement. So, you know, he's not a stupid guy. He understands that the deal's got to be right for United, and whether it's Juventus with their plethora of central midfielders and maybe someone like Emre Can coming in the other way with quite a bit of money for Pogba, I think he obviously really wants Madrid. I think that's a more difficult deal to do quickly. We'll wait and see. The fact he hasn't played as well for so long, and the injury, we're not 100% certain exactly what the problem is. It all feels odd, and I'm sure he'll be desperate to get away in January. I think deep down, if you could have a one-on-one with Ollie, I think he'd be really happy for Pogba to go as well, as long as he could get a couple of people coming the other way.
Elsewhere in that starting lineup, Mark, I just want to complete those who were playing. Lindelof, I have to say, proved me wrong yesterday. Some vital blocks, very decent performance. But like you said, it is just one game. We cannot get carried away. That needs to happen game after game after game. Great to see Luke Shaw back in. I thought he was pretty competent for the 88 minutes that he was on the pitch. Jesse Lingard again getting a start. I thought he looked pretty good. Again, has that link up with Rashford and Martial. They do have that understanding. But for me, you mentioned him earlier again, Daniel James. I mean, he has gone above and beyond for me. He does not look out of place. And I'm waiting for the time where I go, do you know what? This is a lad we signed from Swansea as, you know, a prospect for the future, really. But he's just been brilliant.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, everyone talks about his pace. And I think they do him a slight disservice in that probably three or four times I watched him closely against City, and he made some very clever decisions and moved the ball well when it really mattered in the final third. And I think that's a critical thing when you're talking about this level. You know, there's lots of footballers with extreme pace, probably not quite as quick as him, but you know what I mean. But he's got a level of football intelligence which has probably surprised quite a lot of people. And like you say, he isn't daunted, he hasn't been overwhelmed by being a Manchester United player, which, you know, when you come from a club like Swansea, with all due respect to them, it is an enormous gap because the expectation is so massive. And he had so little experience, even at that level. For him to do what he's done this season has been a real credit to him, and he's obviously got a lot of character about him.
Of course, he isn't initially one of United's own, but of course Marcus Rashford was in there, Scott McTominay was in there, Axel Tuanzebe on the bench. Again, like you said, great performance from Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Again, not one of United's own, but the stat has come out. I believe it's nearly 4,000 consecutive games now that United have fielded a player who's come through their ranks. That is just a remarkable effort and probably will never be repeated in English football.
Yeah. I completely agree, and it's a credit to the club. Look at the history of United; they have produced some of the truly great players that have ever played the game. I mean, anybody who saw Duncan Edwards play will, without drawing breath, say he's the greatest player they ever saw. Bobby Charlton, Ryan Giggs, Paul Scholes—you're talking about probably the four of the 10 greatest footballers that have ever played the game who've come out of this country. And it's a marvellous credit to, you know, the United of the institution. And it's absolutely fantastic for them that it's continuing. Whether we'll see another Duncan Edwards or a Scholes or at that level, it would be a great thing. And maybe Marcus Rashford could be the one who you know, he's only 22. He's only just turned 22. He could be the next one who gets to that level.
Yep, let's hope so. It is certainly a confirmation of the direction in which Manchester United are going. And that is exactly what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said after that victory over Manchester City at the Etihad yesterday. We looked like a Manchester United team. That is a big thing for me. Well said, Ollie. This is the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport. Plenty more coming up.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. We do have Norwich City and Sunderland coming up between 10 and 11. But right now we are focusing on the Red Devils and that victory over Manchester City at the Etihad yesterday. It leaves, by the way, City 14 points behind Liverpool at the top of the Premier League table. You would think that perhaps that title race is now over. Unless, of course, Leicester continue their fine run of form and beat Liverpool on Boxing Day to close the gap. Who knows what might happen? You have to say, we're not going to talk too much about Liverpool. This is the Manchester United fan show, but they are unbeaten in 53 Premier League games. So credit given where credit is due. Right, we're going to move on now to an interesting chat that we heard earlier on Andy Hodgson's Kicking Off show here on Love Sport. He spoke to Andy Ritchie, ex-Manchester United striker, of course, was with the club for 3 years between 1977 and 1980. And Paul Lake, the ex-City midfielder, he spent 10 years at Main Road between 86 and 96. Andy had them both on the show going head-to-head after that victory for United on Saturday evening. And he posed the first question to Andy Ritchie, and that was, Andy, are you going to gloat?
No, I never, ever gloat. Listen, it was a good day. We had to defend stoutly, which we knew that, I think we knew we were going to have to do that, but I thought we were great offensively when we had to be. So never gloat. It's nice to win. You can be knocked off your pedestal so quickly, but you enjoy it, of course, and I'm sure Paul would say the same.
Paul, did you enjoy it?
I always find difficult watching derby games, whether you win or you lose. It's always that trepidation of what's going to happen. And it was a difficult day for City in more ways than one. You know, notwithstanding the fact that United set up really well, kept themselves nice and compact, difficult to beat, stopped the passes going out wide, stopped the crosses, and counter-attacked really, really well with such pace and quality. And when Rashford is in that kind of form, he's difficult to manage. But I think it was also a difficult day when you see the racism which occurred later on in the second half, which nobody wants to see. And when it's your own club, even though it's a handful of individuals, it's still really, really disappointing.
Yeah, indeed it is. And we'll come to that in just a second. Listen, I can see Andy Ritchie, although he's been, you know, really quite pleasant about this, I can see him rubbing his hands, you know, like a little pixie in the background going, like that. Andy, was Rashford the key yesterday, or was it the whole team effort?
No, definitely the whole team effort. I mean, as Paul said, Marcus is in absolutely scintillating form at the moment. You know, when he's in that form, excuse me, he is very difficult to keep quiet. But I just thought that there were so many good performances as a whole, brilliant. But Wan-Bissaka, I thought Victor Lindelof was excellent. I actually thought Fred and Scott McTominay were brilliant in midfield, breaking things up, passing the ball quickly. I mean, Scott's just become a fantastic young player, hasn't he, in such a short space of time. But it was marred, like you say, at the end. But, you know, hopefully we won't dwell on that because they're just a bunch of idiots that can't keep their mouths shut.
Yeah, well, we shall see. I mean, Man City came out straight away about the allegations of racism and are going to look along with the police at exactly what that means. For Man City, Paul, is it all over? All the pundits are saying today, that's it. They can't catch Liverpool. Season over. Just worry about the Champions League.
I wouldn't say worry about Champions League. It's always a pleasure to be involved in the Champions League. And City fans over the years have only dreamt of these heady days. So I'm not overly disappointed. I've had three fantastic seasons. It's been incredible for us with Pep Guardiola. But as it stands now, I think it is a bridge too far. And I think it's a case of just getting players fit, consolidating, and trying to, you know, rekindle that form. It just feels like we've lost our mojo at the moment. I'm not really sure what it is. I get the impression there is a lack of belief and trust in our back line, you know, and obviously when you're coming against teams that will get a sense now of how to manage City. Wolves did it ever so well earlier on this season, and obviously United set up really well. But the one thing that we don't really speak about is the fact that City, even though we have scored, I think it's 23 goals this season, the goal difference is still good. we just have stopped taking the chances that we are creating, and we did create a lot of chances, and hats off to United because they blocked every shot, every cross. They're just very competitive, very well set up, and like you say, sometimes in those kind of games, as Andy and I both know, he's got to take it on the chin and say, on the day, United were the better team.
It's funny though, isn't it? They've lost the mojo, but in the week they beat my team, Burnley. Not beat, I mean, they battered us. We've had two batterings in a week. It's ridiculous. So I didn't expect that. I thought City, I would have put my £10 on City yesterday, wouldn't you, before the kickoff?
Well, again, it's a derby game, and that's something, I mean, I learnt to my cost last season when, you know, City were winning 2-0 and absolutely blew United away in the first half. You never saw that second half coming, you know, so you can never take anything for granted. But, no, I mean, I have seen it a lot in games where this season, I mean, Newcastle take it, you know, as a case in point. I mean, Burnley are obviously going through a dip themselves, but when you get teams that are just so disciplined and have got pace in wide areas, because if you know how City play, and Andy has seen it, I've seen it, and you'll have seen it yourself, is that, you know, probably as soon as our defenders get the ball, their first thing they're thinking about is to attack. It's not about shape, really. It's not about being as organised as you would normally be. And that's the difference, is that, you know, when you're looking at teams now at this moment in time, they're all thinking about, listen, if we can just stay compact and organised and we can weather the storm, playing against City at the moment, especially on our left-hand side, where with Zinchenko being out, believe it or not, he seems to have been our most consistent left-back. You feel that Mendy's not really got any form to speak of. Angelino is a young player trying to make it in this team, and that is so difficult. And when you come against a player with the pace of James, who would frighten every single left-back in the division in terms of a 1v1 situation, then you put all those things together, and it's very, very difficult. And Emerick Laporte has been such a huge miss for us, that once he comes back and gets fit, and there's a lot of pressure going to be put on his shoulders and responsibility, but you do feel that when he comes back, he'll be the experienced, organised player on that left-hand side that we've been missing.
Andy, I'm looking at a table now which shows Man United in fifth. You know, at one point, a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, you kind of going, wow, they, you know, Burnley were above them. It was a bizarre situation. In fifth with 24 points now, can they push on and finish easily in the top four from what you saw yesterday?
Well, what I think is you won't be playing against Manchester City every week, and you won't be playing against Spurs every week. And to be fair, we actually did play a lot better, I thought, against Spurs in terms of the whole game and the way that we attacked more. We know that we are not where we want to be in terms of catching City, in terms of the way that we play, but that's in progress at the moment. We know that. We're in that flux situation where we want to get better, we want to get better players in, and that's still ongoing. But it could be a catalyst for the boys, because it's two big teams, two really good results. You know that when you win in and when you get results like that, it breeds confidence, and it must be absolutely flowing through the boys at the moment. They must be cloud nine this morning, and hopefully, yes, they'll be. What it breeds, and Paul knows this, when you have two results like that, you can't wait for the next game. You want to be playing. You want to play in 2 days. It doesn't matter how short the break is between it. They'll just be itching and itching now to play against Alkmaar. But it'll be a young team against AZ on Thursday at Old Trafford.
Well, a bit of European action this week, and of course overshadowed slightly the victory yesterday, as you both said, by the racist abuse, which there is of course absolutely no place in the game for any of that nonsense. So hopefully that gets sorted out in the right way. And if you are an idiot considering going to a game and doing such a thing, please go somewhere else, because the game doesn't want you or need you. Before we go, Andy Ritchie, Paul is a little bit sad. I mean, he's not admitting it, but he's a little bit sad. Would you just give him 10 seconds? Just a little bit of a pep talk, just to cheer him up for me.
Yeah, come on, Paul, get your head up. It's only 3 points.
I think that's helped.
Listen, man. I think Man City, Paul, you know as well as I. You're saying that it's over. I don't think it is. I mean, Manchester United have caught points, massive points deficits up to win the Premiership. It only needs Liverpool just to have that little bit of a wobble, and will they have it? Because they've not been in that position for a long time, have they? So I don't think it's true that it's all finished. You've still got a chance, mate.
Well, I think you're right, Andy. I think in terms of there is the opportunity, but I just feel that if it was 8 points, but because of the amount of points that there is that gap, I think it's Leicester who probably might be the team that Liverpool will be more concerned about. And once you're not favourites anymore and you're just waiting in the wings, there's always that chance, but it's having to win now every single game to the end of the season, which City can do. But I just feel with the players out injured and that lack of rhythm, I just feel this season will be a case of consolidating and looking towards maybe Champions League and seeing what happens there. But listen, my class with City is always half full. You know, where we've been over the years, I'm loving every minute of it.
Enjoyed that. That was Andy Ritchie and Paul Lake there with a friendly tete-a-tete on Andy Hodgson's kicking off earlier today on Love Sport. We've been getting the thoughts of City reps, United reps, City fans, United fans all throughout the day. And we're going to just relay some of that as we progress on this, the Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport. We're going to be looking ahead to the game with Everton next weekend. Of course, Everton now under the temporary stewardship of Duncan Ferguson, who, let's not beat around the bush, has had a pretty decent record against United over the years. Goals for Newcastle, of course. That solitary goal in the 94-95 campaign where he flexed his bicep to the crowd, and the brace from the 96-97 campaign, I seem to remember, early on in the season. Jordi Cruyff getting on the score sheet that day. Crikey, what a name that is. This is the Manchester United fan show on Love Sport. We've got Mark Flanagan back on the line in a minute.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
The Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, joined by Mark Flanagan, our Northwest correspondent. We're going to go back to that game with Manchester City last night and just reflect on what was great and what was not so great about the game as well. And actually, before we get there is some breaking news coming out of the sporting world right now, and that is that Everton are investigating an allegation of homophobic chanting by their fans during the game against Chelsea on Saturday. You are just at your wit's end with this. I mean, what is going on out there? It's just insane. Of course, we saw the racist abuse, the alleged, we have to say, racist abuse in the game at the Etihad last night between United and City. Police have said they have received a report of a fan making alleged racist gestures. We've all seen the footage on the TV. We've seen Fred apparently struck by an object as well. We've since heard that a man, a 41-year-old man, has been held on suspicion of a racially aggravated public order and remains in custody. So time will tell what happens with him. But Mark, I'm going to come to you on this because I mean, I don't know where we are with this. And it just seems utterly, utterly incomprehensible that this is happening in 2019. And not only that, was this happening before and people just weren't aware of it and people weren't speaking up about it? I know it was happening way back in the 70s and in the 80s. I know that that was known. But since we thought we were perhaps past this, especially in England, we know it happens on the continent. We've seen with England, of course, playing in their international matches in certain parts of Eastern Europe that this has happened. But here, has it been happening the whole time and people just haven't spoken up about it, and now there's just this wave of everybody actually coming to the fore and speaking publicly about it? Or is this brand new?
I think there's an element about that actually, that it has been happening. I remember about 10 years ago, I went to a Hull City game. Two of my best friends are Hull City fans, and I was shocked as there was a wave of six or seven Hull City fans, inverted commas Hull City fans, came down the steps doing Nazi salutes, and there was a policeman about 5 yards in front of them, and I told the policeman, I said, I couldn't believe, have you seen this? And these things spring up because football reflects society, and in a crowd of 50, 60, 70,000, there are going to be extremely unpleasant people. The good thing is that there's so many cameras at Premier League football grounds now, we can catch them. That's the critical thing, and we can ban them. This guy will never hopefully go to a football game in his life. I don't think it'll really properly ever go away. The only sort of silver lining behind all this is that we are, as a country, much better than many other supposed civilised countries. I mean, this is a week we're talking about a supposedly respectable Italian newspaper, you know, talking about a black players in a headline. What did they say?
Black Friday, they said. Yeah, it was Black Friday for the game between Inter and
Black
Roma.
Black Friday with Lukaku and Smalling.
With Lukaku and Smalling.
This is supposedly a respected newspaper. So That'll never happen in this country, and we've just got to be vigilant. And we've just, it takes, one of the good things is, I think there would have been a lot of City fans in there will have helped identify this person. Hopefully they will have helped identify the person or persons who threw the coins or whatever it was at Fred, which I thought was really, really unsettling, actually. Those kind of things where players are actually in physical danger leave a really bad taste in my mouth. It's just not on. You should be able to go to your place of work and not be in fear of getting injured from somebody in the crowd. It's absolutely outrageous. And, you know, let's hope that all these guys are caught, and maybe girls as well are caught, and are never allowed to watch a football game again.
It's just staggering as well, isn't it? Or maybe it isn't staggering because of the intellect, the intelligence of these people, that they're doing it in the front row of these football stadiums, yeah, with images now that are beamed around the world. I mean, do you think you're not going to get caught? And let alone the alleged racist abuse. Just the abuse. You can see it in these people's faces. I mean, footballers always talk about this when they say it amazes them that these grown men and women can be so red-faced. And I know that some people say football is a vehicle for everybody to let out their pent-up frustrations that they built up throughout the week. They go to football to let off steam. But that is still absolutely, categorically, no excuse to turn around at younger men before you. And this is the issue. You've got older men here abusing these, like, mid-20s kids. I mean, get a life.
Yeah, we saw it with the Chelsea, with the Sterling thing, didn't we? Two guys in the front row. I've been going to football a long time. I mean, you know, the first game that I went to was in 1979, which was a match in Leeds. And what always has shocked me at football games is the language that adults, parents, will use in front of their children who are 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. You know, virtually every game something has happened that has left me almost dismayed. And unfortunately, there are just idiots who go to football matches. And it will forever remain the case. We just got to get better at making sure they're caught and never let them to football grounds. And as I alluded to with the Hull City story, the Premier League is the easiest place to spot them just because of the standard of the stadiums and the amount of cameras. Lower down the leagues, I suspect it goes on just as much. We had the incident with Yeovil, didn't we, where the game was abandoned. It was Yeovil in the FA Cup, wasn't it?
Sorry, it was the Oval in the FA Cup, yeah, and we heard of,
yeah,
well,
so,
reports,
you know, can you
again
imagine
at Forest Green,
like,
this weekend as well. We heard reports apparently from Forest Green that there was, yeah, there was apparently, yeah, racist abuse in that game.
Yeah, but it's harder for those people to get caught because the Oval's ground or Forest Green's ground is not going to have lots of cameras and hasn't going to have the attention of the world on it. So that's going to be the harder thing, stamping it out through the pyramid.
There is just one last thing that I want to discuss on this particular subject. Now, this isn't me casting blame at any individual whatsoever. I can categorically state that's not what I'm doing. So before people say, oh, you can't say that about Raheem Sterling, I'm not doing that at all. I'm not attacking Raheem Sterling. However, it did surprise me that he didn't seem to react to what was going on. And maybe he didn't hear what was going on. 100%, that may well be the case. But you saw Rodri, I think it was Otamendi, you saw Fernandinho, you saw David Silva, all going over to Fred and all going over to the fans and saying, look, calm down. And Raheem Sterling, who's been something of a pioneer for what has been going on in the defence and the opposition towards these vile creatures that are saying these things, I do think he has an opportunity. And I'm not saying he's got a responsibility to step up here, absolutely not, but was that not an opportunity there for Raheem Sterling to go to his own fans as someone who people are now looking to as a guy who is really, you know, he's a, like I said, he's a pioneer. He's someone that people look up to. People are inspiring now to be like Raheem Sterling. Did he not have an opportunity to react to this and say, guys, stop, enough? He didn't seem to react to what was happening.
Yeah, it's a good point, because I think in those circumstances, you kind of see who the leaders are, who've got, you know, that true leadership quality. And you mentioned a few names there, and I'm not surprised they were the people to come forward. The only thing I'd say in Sterling's defence is, you know, was he fully aware? Was he fully compassmentous in terms of what was happening? I think, obviously, the despicable guy who did the monkey chant, whether anyone would have actually heard that, they might have seen it, but whether they could hear him doing that amongst thousands of other fans is obviously difficult. So I'm sure that passed a lot of the players by. But certainly, yeah, in terms of when they were throwing stuff onto the pitch and you could see people going over to try and calm the the fans down. I'm sure if Sterling had gone over, it would have helped.
Yeah, and disclaimer again, not a media agenda against Raheem Sterling at all. And like you said, he could have well just been tuned in to the game and focusing on getting those points for Manchester City. Sticking on Sterling, Mark Flanagan, you noticed something yesterday in a comparison between him and Marcus Rashford.
Yeah, I've been critical of Sterling in terms of, I think he's been slightly elevated above what in terms of how good a player he is for a long time. I think about 15 months ago on Love Sport, I said, and it took a few gasps from the presenters, as I said, there's a lot to be said for being the 11th best player in one of the greatest teams of all time. and that was probably overstating it a little bit. I think I was sorry, over-egging the pudding in terms of Sterling's contribution and what he's done over the last 18 months has been pretty impressive. But I just think that there's an interesting comparison to be made with Rashford, who plays in a similar position, is a similar style player, very similar in terms of the way they come in off the wing and are very effective in that way, are pacey. And for me, Rashford in comparison just ticks so many more boxes in terms of he delivers when it really matters, he does it in really meaningful games, when games are tight, he makes a big difference, like he did with Spurs. I think, you know, the first goal was so important. He caught the Spurs goalkeeper by mistake, by surprise, although he probably should have stopped it, but he made it happen. And I think Sterling is very, very lucky in terms of he gets on the end of things. He's playing in a great team. And I just wonder if Rashford had been playing with De Bruyne and Silva and Aguero, how many goals he would have scored in that time as well. And I think there's a really telling statistic about Sterling in terms of not doing it when it really, really matters. He's played 22 meaningful games against Manchester United and Liverpool since he moved to City and not scored in any of them. And I think that is a really sort of telling statistic. He didn't score in the World Cup. He didn't score in the Euros for England. It might sound like I'm being particularly harsh, but I think this is a good vehicle to do it on the Man United fan
You crack on, Mark.
But I just think to myself, when have I said to myself, gosh, Sterling really made the difference in that game? You know, he scores two when they win 5-0, or he scores three when they win 6-0. But when has he really scored that critical goal in the last 10 minutes to give City a victory? Rashford, in comparison, you'd think about the winner when he was 18-year-old in the Manchester Derby, the free kick against Celta Vigo, that critical win in the semi-final in the Europa League. He's got 2 in 10 minutes against Liverpool when United won 2-1 under Jose in the 17-18 season. And I think he's just got that character, that Rashford. He is determined to be the main man in the big games. And I think when you watch Sterling yesterday, the amount of times he made safe passes. This is a guy who's hit the jackpot in terms of the genetic gifts. I can't think of a player who can sprint, get to top speed in 15 yards as well as Sterling, which gives him an enormous advantage over 99% of the players he's going to come up against. But yesterday he just kept passing it back, passing it sideways, giving, you know, the easy option was available and he took it. And very rarely did you see him kind of really go for it. And I think that's a pattern that you can look back through over the last 3 or 4 years in the critical crunch games with Sterling.
I agree with you, Mark. I think you look at those big games this season, like you said yesterday against United, Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I'm not going to say you had him in his pocket, but he performed admirably against him. Same in the game against Liverpool. Yes, City won convincingly, but you saw his reaction to Joe Gomez. You saw how he was, you know, kept out of the game by Trent Alexander-Arnold. And I think the question here would be, if you were to take Raheem Sterling out of the Manchester City side and plonk him in West Ham side, for example, and if you were to take Marcus Rashford out of the United side and put him in West Ham side, who would perform the better? For me, without a shadow of a doubt, it would be Marcus Rashford.
Yeah, and he doesn't have as good a goal-scoring record as Sterling, but he's done it in a struggling team as well. I mean, in many respects, a lot of games this season he's carried them, whereas Sterling's been carried along on a Manchester City wave. I mean, the indisputably, in my mind, the finest Premier League team that there's ever been to get 200 points in two seasons is just something out of the ordinary, which will probably never happen again. And he's been a massive beneficiary of playing with all those great players. And I think sometimes when you look at his goal stats in the last two seasons, you think, wow, what a player this guy is. You remember how high he was ranked in the FIFA Player of the Year, which we've just had. He's in the top six for the Sports Personality of the Year. But I just think if you look at that City team and you think, who are the best players? You go De Bruyne, you go Aguero, you go Bernardo Silva, you go Fernandinho, and then probably you go Sterling.
Yeah.
Well, Rashford is, for me, is the absolute standout for United at the moment. And actually, I think if he wasn't a Manchester lad who loved the club, I'd be worried about him getting picked off by a Barcelona or a Real Madrid.
Yeah, well, thankfully, he is Manchester born and bred, Marcus Rashford, with 13 goals in 21 appearances in all competitions this season. That equals his best goal-scoring return ever for United in a single season, and we have plenty more to go. We don't, however, have plenty more to go on the United Fan Show. We've got about 10 minutes to go, and we'll be back in a short jiffy.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
The Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. We've got about 7 minutes to go. Now, throughout the day, we've been getting reaction from that brilliant derby victory last night at the Etihad and speaking to various fans about what they thought of the game. Some were happy, of course, some not so much. And two of those were David Walker from Red But Never Red. Interesting title, that, for a fan account, I have to say. And Jay from the Full Time Devils. They were speaking earlier on Love Sport, and this one's a good one. The question was put to them as to whether they could sign a player from the opposite club. So if City could sign a United star and United could sign a City star, who would they pick? Jay was first up, and it might just be a certain Stockport Iniesta.
I'd sign Phil Foden, because I think we like young Mancunians at Manchester United. We give them a chance as well. And Pep Guardiola said he was the best player he's ever worked with. So, and he's worked with Messi. So if that's the sort of accolades he gets from the manager, he must be something good. And I think he's wasted at City. He barely gets any game time. Come to United, he'd shine. And he'd fit in well with our young, vibrant Mancunian team.
Phil Foden's obviously our player. He's not going anywhere. I'm not saying it's nonsense, but so many people say, oh, he's not being played, he's not being played, Pep's not... The kid's 19. David Silva is leaving City at the end of this season after 10 years. Phil Foden is the heir apparent. He will get plenty of game time. He'll be world class. He'll be Manchester City legend for years to come. And as you guys just pointed out, he's a local lad, so it will mean the world to the City fans. If I'm looking at a United player to come to our team, the obvious one at this juncture, because of the deficiencies that we have at the moment, would be Maguire at the centre of defence. Because we've been decimated by injury and a loss of form and God knows what. So I'd take Maguire. So we're not doing a swap Maguire for Foden. No, that's never happening.
David Walker was not happy with that. David Walker from Red But Never Red. Not overly chuffed with Jay from Full Time Devils there, suggesting that United should probably sign Phil Foden if they had the option. What do you make of that one, Mark?
Did Guardiola really say that about Foden?
What's that? He's the best he's ever worked with?
I find that impossible to believe.
Yeah, do you know what? When he said that, I was thinking as to whether he did actually say that. He might have said maybe one of the most exciting prospects. Didn't he say something as well? He was worth upwards of X amount of million, and the fact that he'd hardly played at all for him so far.
Yeah, Messi's the greatest player I've ever seen.
Well. Hold up, Mark. There's a certain Cristiano Ronaldo that would beg to differ.
Well... It's a toss of a coin, but maybe I'm just getting slightly worked up by that comment, and I'm getting a bit overexcited. Goodness me, I can't believe he said that. To take Maguire as well, would you over Rashford? I'm just thinking from a practicality. Rashford only turned 22 at the end of October, so interesting. It's funny, isn't it? So begrudging of each other.
I know, it was brilliant, wasn't it? It was absolutely brilliant. I love the way that David Walker finished it with, we're not doing a swap deal, you can forget that. But just interesting sometimes to hear what these opposing fans think. And I guess he was looking at the void in the middle of defence, like he said. We'll move on now, of course. United facing AZ Alkmaar in the middle of the week. Well, towards the end of the week now, of course, on Thursday nights in the Europa League. A bit of a non-contest. United have already qualified for the next stages. And next Sunday, Everton come to Old Trafford. Everton, obviously, obviously buoyed by that temporary appointment of Duncan Ferguson with an opening win over Chelsea. By the way, I don't know whether you saw the manufacturing of the ball boy celebrations, by the way. Nice to see, but a little bit ridiculous. I mean, it was so obvious that the directive had been given to the club, to the players, to the ball boys and management to just get involved with everybody as if to say, it's okay, everything's fine, we're all in this together. But a victory for Everton against Chelsea. How do you see this one going? Do you think that Everton are going to have their tails up in this one?
Goodness me, if Duncan Ferguson told me to do something, I'd do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think it's whether they can carry it on. I think that the first game with the emotion and being at Goodison, it was critically important for them. They might be on a bit of a downer, actually, on the back of it, because they would have been so much invested. They worked so hard. This extraordinary statistic, the most tackles in a Premier League game for, I think, was it 3 or 4 years? So that, you know, they Ferguson before the game said, "I want to see blood on the pitch," I suspect he'll love the idea of taking Everton to Old Trafford. I mean, I think he's loving every minute of it, isn't he? He's sort of living the dream, because I don't think he ever thought for a second he'd get the opportunity to lead Everton in a Premier League game. And to take them to Old Trafford particularly will be a special thing for him. So we don't know, do we? I mean, I think Everton will be canny. They'll pack the midfield. They'll know how you stop Manchester United and whether United can carry that momentum forward. And I just feel there's just a slight change with United. I do feel that touch wood, I'm touching wood, that corner has been turned. If they can beat Everton and record 3 successive wins, it really does set them up when you consider that they've got Watford and Newcastle and Burnley over the Christmas period, and then they have a decent run. You know, they could be really close to Chelsea by the new year. The kind of flip side to that is without Pogba and the sort of other injury concerns, the paper-thin nature of United squad. He's having to play a similar team. Pereira had to come on. Obviously, we're just completely off the pace when he came on. Mata obviously looks a bit off the pace. So Ollie doesn't have a lot of options. He's got options in defence, but not a lot of options in the middle and going forward in attack either, unfortunately.
Mark, great having you on again this weekend. Thoroughly enjoyed that hour. We will be talking to you, of course. Well, you'll be talking to many people on Love Sport throughout the week, but you'll be back on the Man United Fan Show next week at 9 p.m. That was Mark Flanagan, our North West correspondent. Of course, Manchester United winning 2-1 at the Etihad last night. Great result for the Red Devils. And next weekend, it's Everton, where a Ferguson will be in the dugout at Old Trafford. Who would have thought it? We'll see you next week at 9.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.